are here at BILF 2015 edition. I'm here with some good friends. We've known each other for years, so this is almost like a little mini slumber party for us.
Yeah.
Was that an awkward way to start?
No, it's fine.
Oh, okay, great.
I'm sure it'll get worse.
So what do you guys do for Microsoft?
Oh, gosh. What don't we do for Microsoft?
Usually you clean up around the
everything we do,
area,
we do it for Microsoft.
Yeah, janitorial.
Janitorial services.
I work on the C# team. We work on the C# team. I focus primarily on IDE experiences, so editing experiences, things like IntelliSense for C#, for Visual Basic, that sort of thing.
And you, sir?
I focus on the C# language, so I lead the language design efforts.
So the language itself that we all know and love is part of your work.
It is my life and blood.
Nice.
Yes.
So first question.
You wouldn't
question.
Know how to type it without me.
That's right. I mean, right? we love everybody.
His life and blood too.
If we had pillows, we'd be pillow fighting right now. No, I'm better. So let's start with this. I'm trying to get him not laugh. So let's start with this.
What is it with you guys?
So the first question is, what is Roslyn, and what does it do? That someone asked me back there to ask that.
Oh. Well, Roslyn is a project that it took more than a tenth of my lifespan.
Okay. Are you still thinking about the pillow fight? Is that what's messing you up?
It's a little distracting.
All right, okay.
Roslyn is a project we started about six years ago, kind of a reboot of several projects before that. So it's the desire to have something like it has been there for many years.
Right.
But it was basically a rebuilding of the entire C# language stack, really, from the ground up. So starting with the compiler, rebuilding up the compiler, building APIs on top of it so that you could basically introspect or generate source code or do things, be able to write things against the compiler, all the information that's in the compiler about your source code, to write smart tools, right? Or to do smart things with source code. And then on top of that, building other pieces of that stack, so the IDE pieces, doing things like in exploring, you know, a REPL experience, scripting. There's a lot of things that went into Project Roslyn.
So pretend I don't know anything.
Done.
That was really fast.
No problem.
Pretend I don't know anything.
Was that rehearsed?
No.
What kind of tooling could you build that would inject into the compiler? What are some things that you've seen that people have started to do?
Oh, golly.
Well, things like StyleCup, that will check various parts of your code and highlight it in the IDE and offer you fixes to change your code and whatever, are things that anybody can write and inject into the compiler and have light up in the IDE. Refactorings,
okay.
Stuff like that. You can. A thing that we're already starting to see take up on is writing things on top of Roslyn, analyzers and fixes on top of Roslyn, and shipping them with your libraries to help you use your library in the right way.
Okay.
So you can imagine API not just coming with XML comments and guidelines, but actually actionable, executable guidance, if you will.
Yeah. So are you injecting into the compile pipeline, or what's
going on? Terrify me with that word injection.
Oh, sorry.
But yes, I mean, in particular, the analyzer framework, which is, there's a particular API around, and it's a supported way to basically perform analysis inside the compiler. Actually runs, yes, during when the compiler is in its various stages, at the times when it's binding the file to get all the semantic information. That's when it's also calling into the analyzer to produce additional diagnostics. So what's really cool about it is that you can write an analyzer to either, you know, notify the user about something or enforce some sort of semantic that probably wouldn't be appropriate in the compiler itself.
Got it.
Right? It's in the compiler there are things that are certainly appropriate, things like broken syntax or, you know, this type isn't there, that sort of thing, that are perfectly appropriate in the compiler. But something like StyleCop, for example, which might not be something we want to put in the compiler. We've done a few of those in the past and they always feel a little weird. Now we have a framework where we can go and add more diagnostics and more guidance for users without actually having to touch the compiler, which
is
very cool.
So if you have a tyrannical manager that says curly brace on the next line every time, you can inject.
No, that's just sensible.
That's the right way. Okay, and you can enforce it now using Roslyn. So let's take a step back, and what does it actually look like to call into the Roslyn API? What is it that you're getting back, and how can you use that information to do these kind of tooling?
Well,
it's an API. It's an object model.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So what you typically do is you will make there's a certain project template that you'll use to build an analyzer and some fixes, for instance. Mm-hmm. to set up sort of the boilerplate around it. The core of the logic is the API will offer you an object model of source code.
Okay.
That you can then, and it's not just, it's a syntax tree, but it's fully concrete syntax tree.
Got
gives
it.
You every little bit of information that yep. you want. And it does semantic analysis for you, all the binding analysis, and you can ask it questions about all those things. Traverse this model, do whatever okay. you want. And once you've figured out that I want to put a squiggle here and so on, you can build a fixer that will take the code around that place and transform it for the user if they choose to activate the fix on that squiggle in the IDE. So uh-huh. you're always just operating on an object model.
Yeah. Got it.
Now, the analyzer framework and the code-aware libraries and this sort of thing is it's a key kind of usage that we're envisioning and really going after in Visual Studio 2015. Mm-hmm. It's actually with the RC that was released today, it's effectively go live for us, go write analyzers, right?
Nice.
But Roslyn is, there's so much more you can do with it. It's just one aspect, one vision that we said, no, this is what we're going to attack this time around. There's a lot of other stuff that we're looking at as
well. I don't think people realize effectively rewriting the compiler is like taking the bottom out of a house, putting the bottom in, putting it back on, and hoping everything works. Did you guys have a lot of like, holy cow, is this working?
Well, it's exactly like that. And if I can push the metaphor super far
Please
until
do,
it breaks,
as far
which
as you
I,
can.
Which Mads knows I always do, it's like it's almost as if that foundation even had imperfections that if you didn't include those imperfections again, the whole house would still fall down, right? You'd have to really try and replicate exactly the behavior of the compiler because backward compatibility is important.
Of course.
Very, very important. There's a lot of legacy code out there. There's a lot of existing projects that are in production, and we can't afford to break any of that.
So here's a question. It sounds like you're actually getting ASTs back with semantic analysis when you're calling into the APIs. Doesn't this slow stuff down a little bit? What are you guys doing to make this speedy?
So this is something that I don't think you see in a lot of places. It is a super efficient implementation of the language semantics, but in such a way that it's both efficient when doing batch compilation, like a pipeline through generating code at the other end.
Okay.
It's also efficient for incremental usage, right? Mm-hmm. So the IDE asks it questions all the time. It's efficient and useful even when the code is broken, because when you're in an IDE, code is broken most of the time, right? You're in the middle of typing it.
At least
it.
When I'm writing code. I mean, you guys
then it's broken all the time.
Yeah, that's right.
You press a dot, your code is broken.
Why is this not compiling? Roslyn, Dustin.
But also, we made some modern or not so traditional choices about how the API works. Whenever the source code changes, you essentially get a completely new syntax tree back, completely generated from scratch. You'd think it's a new object. These trees are immutable, and what we really do is do a lot of sharing under the hood and some incremental lexing and parsing, some caching, some lazy stuff, so that every time a single character is typed or deleted, we're effectively, observably computing a new syntax tree for you from the ground up, except we use all these techniques behind the hood to make it super efficient. And that means that having an immutable object model means that it's super safe for someone to consume. They know that somebody else is not going to change it under the hood or change it under their feet while they're working on it because it can't change.
Right.
And it means that we can parallelize a lot of things. So we can make full use of the increasing number of CPU cores that will be available.
Well, that's really clear. So I love the way that you're saying these things are returning ASTs in an immutable state. It seems like it would be contrary to the thought of, well, what if I want to make a change? Do you just make a copy and push it back?
Yes. There's a single... Think of it, there's a single mutable variable in the whole system, and that is the root of everything.
That's cool.
And so you generate a new thing from the old thing. Also, when you're making code transformations, right, the way that you transform a syntax tree is to build a new one from the pieces of the old one.
Got it.
Yank it back in. You can even, like, and this really happens, like, when you use the IDE, you can see this happening. Before you yank it back in to be the new state of the world, the thing that's in the buffer, you can show it in preview. So you have, this is what the current world looks like, and in a preview window on top,
this is what it could
this
look
is the
like.
This is the future.
Right.
We can even run the analyzers on top of it, squiggle it in there, and say, oh, by the way, this there would be a problem here if you
this
go
this is the
in.
Future. Curly yes. brace on the next line. I mean, that's what we're gonna. That's what I'm gonna.
And
do.
In that case, there would be no squiggle that would show up right in the preview, because what we do is we just the IDE features simply run on a snapshot of that object model.
Got it.
Right. So if we have a future speculative kind of snapshot, the IDE features still function on that. So, oh, you know, this fix adds a using? Well, in the preview, you're going to see the type colorized because it is. It's correct
right.
now.
Yeah. Got it. That's awesome. So we'll take some questions here. Dustin, you know I have to ask, when scripting interactive window is coming to VS 2015,
oh my
smiley
goodness.
Face.
Smiley
no,
face.
It's been tamped down with the smiley face. That fixes everything.
Right, I feel so much better. I almost feel like I don't have to reply.
Oh, no,
that's not true. So it's been a big year for us. Last year when we were sitting up here, you know, we had just had the historic moment a couple days before where we released Roslyn open source on CodePlex, the compilers.
I believe there was cheering on the streets.
There was. So since then, you know, we've moved to GitHub. And right after moving to GitHub, because we were just not, apparently we had lots of spare cycles in the day, we also opened up the rest of the stack. And we opened up the interactive window and scripting. And so that stuff is actually there, can be, in fact, built and installed in Visual Studio. So and then we started openly talking about a roadmap there.
Okay.
So up on our GitHub repo, there is a roadmap for interactive and scripting. I can't tell you when it'll happen. You know, we're still wrapping up current version of Visual Studio. But it is hot. Off of that to get to the next thing, so it's
cool.
definitely still on the roadmap, and I was actually thinking about showing it on Friday in our talk.
Oh, yeah,
hey,
yeah,
maybe.
Yeah, just to tease.
We have a talk on Friday.
Yeah,
maybe you know it. Your moms are going to show up, obviously, and maybe hopefully more people will show up. All right, so next question: what I didn't get clear about Roslyn is it compiling still to IL or is it binary?
It compiles to IL, just like the old compiler. We'll happily hand the IL over to .NET Native, which is then happy to compile it down to binary. So those are two separate things.
Yep.
So Roslyn lies at a different sort of stage of the whole thing.
Yeah.
It's just, I mean, when you think about the compilation piece, if you're not thinking about the API, it's almost just a wholesale replacement of the existing compiler. So it's going to do the same things, right? So compiling to IL is definitely what you want to expect a C# compiler to do.
In a few places, it'll generate more efficient IL.
Yes.
But that's a different story.
Okay, that's awesome. So let's get into this next topic, which I think is interesting. Roslyn has been open sourced. Is it source open or open source? Are you taking contributions? Is there a process for that? Have there been contributions? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes.
Anyone? Yeah.
Nice. Thank you. That's all we've got for today.
You know, it's been a year now since we first went to CodePlex and then recently moved to GitHub, but it's been a year of process and learning, and we've been developing in the open. We've had some missteps along the way. The community's called us out appropriately along the way, and we've made some corrections. Now, I mean, we're taking contributions. There are substantial things happening where people are making contributions, and it's also kind of hand in hand with our friends in, you know, CoreFX and CoreCLR, who are also taking broad contributions. And it's just over the last year of experimentation and learning how to kind of live in this world, and also figure out how we can take contributions into the product and all those kinds of things. We've learned a lot, please.
So
submit pull requests. Things are happening.
Do you take pull requests?
Yes.
What kind of stuff have people been fixing in the community?
Well, at first it was just like XML.comment tweaks,
yeah,
right?
That's how it
typos.
Started. Can I be the first one to submit a pull request and get
to replace TEH with THE?
Nice.
There have been some very interesting pull requests into the VB compiler. We take bug fixes in the IDE. There's all sorts of things. We have an app for grabs label. Anybody can go grab if it's something that we're like, you know, yes, we should fix that. We don't want to outright throw the bug away.
Yeah.
But it's probably not going to be in this release because we've got a lot of really high priority things. But you want to help out? Feel free. And there have been a number of little bug fixes and tweaks. They've been pretty cool. Another place we get contribution, though, is not just, you know, contributing code, but also contributing to the discussion and the conversation.
Right.
So having our issues open, you can talk about, if you want, C# language design in the open has been huge.
Yeah, that's the next thing I want to talk about, language design. So that's a good segue into sort of this
good
question.
Job.
You're welcome.
It's
like, that's what I do.
You see that? It's like we know what's going on. Let's move on to talk about the next version of C#.
Yes.
The one that's coming up. It's C# 6, right?
C# 6 is coming out, yes.
And what is it that we get there that we don't have before? What have we been doing there?
Well, you get more language features.
Nice. Language features
language
for
features.
The win.
The C# 6, it's sort of really like, it's a celebration of our new agility with a new code base, the Roslyn code base. that we can do a lot of little but very useful things that were just too hard to do for their value in the old code base. We really took a round of, these are things that will make my code simpler, get rid of a lot of boilerplate, just beautiful little things that we'll also be showing in our talk on Friday.
Oh, hey, plug.
That are just like wholesale gonna change how you write C#. Like every little piece of C# code is going to be different if people use these features, but in small ways.
Okay.
That's sort of the theme.
So what are some of those small changes that are gonna make our lives better?
Getter only auto props, string interpolation, and name a feature that allows you to safely get the string for a value, or for a name in the program that'll help with refactoring bugs.
Right.
There's null conditional operator.
The question dot
that lets you check for null as you're dotting into things rather than having to wrap null checks around everything and so on. All these little things that just tighten things up.
That's awesome. So let's take some questions. Now moving forward to C# 7, I mean, I can't believe we're already talking about it. We haven't even C# 6 yet. Is C# 6 is an RC or what?
It's an RC, yes.
It's RC. And so now they're asking about C# 7. The question is, which of the F# features, like pattern matching, discriminate unions, would you like to implement? And it almost seems like passive aggressive, like which F# features are you putting in C#? I want to know right now.
Well, I think F# programmers, including the asker here, they well know that these features weren't in F# first.
There's a whole
tradition of functional languages that these things come from, and F# as an ML dialect fits in with that well. But we are very inspired by having F# as one of our sister languages and seeing the usage of it. And so it's true that in C# 7 in particular, a number of the features we've been looking at since January, we've been designing C# 7, and design nodes go out every week to GitHub, and everybody contributes to the discussion and so on. Proposals there galore, lots of discussion. A lot of those features have a functional slant to them. And I think that's sort of we're still like totally just playing around and figuring out what C# 7 should be about. Maybe it shouldn't even be called 7. Maybe we should call it 8 or 10.
Why don't you call
something.
It C# Seth? I mean, that's just a
that's
know.
An option.
Oh, is it? I should go on there and do the discussion and see what
Yeah,
people
I think
do.
You should submit that as an issue on GitHub.
Yeah, I think you should take the temperature of the community on that.
Right.
One of the themes that I think we're kind of focusing in on is it has to be easier to work with wire data.
Okay.
So there are some things we're looking at there. Various other functional style things we're talking about, like tuples, and they mention in their question also, what did they mention? It went away.
Pattern matching, discriminated unions,
stuff like that. We'll definitely look at that. And another thing that we've been spending the last month or so churning on is trying to sort of retroactively make C# null aware, in the sense that we can help you write code that doesn't have null reference exceptions.
Yeah, that's a biggie.
Which is almost impossible to do with an existing language on top of a runtime where everything has a default value that's null.
Make the default value like 2.
Yeah, exactly. Much better.
You're right. I can't believe I just solved this for you guys.
Thank you, man.
No problem. Yeah, so anytime.
I would go on the GitHub discussion and put that
just
in.
Just make it 2.
There you go again.
Okay. So, which brings me to the next question. You guys are developing C# 7 in the open. So the design notes that you sit down and type these up as you talk about, these are online?
Yeah.
And so how can someone go on there and sort of voice their opinion? Have people been doing that?
Oh, yeah. They comment on the design notes. They say...
A lot, right?
Sometimes the issues don't get a lot of discussion, irregular issues, but when Mads posts...
he's a rock star.
Everybody's
pretty glad he sat next to me. And not
the design
everybody's
notes get
a language
lot of
designer.
Discussion.
Yeah. Everybody's a language designer.
Yeah,
right? And so you get lots of opinions. And what surprised me... going to GitHub especially, which is a large community, is, I shouldn't say this surprised me, but it did, the quality of the feedback is just amazing, man.
We really get in the habit
of circling back, looking at what people said since last time and taking that in as part of the discussion. And so the feedback loop, even now where we're not even building anything or we haven't even decided anything yet, feedback loop is already so awesome. that is really helping us drive the feature forward, focus on what's important, cut the stuff that's not important, get the right direction on it.
That's great.
It's amazing.
Let's take some more questions here. A lot of the top of the C-Sharp 7 work list seems influenced by functional programming. How far would the C-Sharp team be willing to go in that direction? You know, it feels like there's good things in all languages, but it feels like you can't really make a language be all things to all people.
That's
Where
true.
Do you draw the line?
I think for us, it's very important that C-Sharp retains its soul.
Okay.
It has to keep feeling like C-Sharp. It's okay for it to evolve, but we shouldn't have a revolution where it changes its feeling completely. And we also don't want to end up in a situation where there are like two camps that can both coexist in the language of two fundamentally different ways of doing things and
right.
sort of a dual set of features for each. So we have to keep the unity of the language somehow. And that means that even though we are very strongly inspired by some functional features, for instance,
right.
we keep noodling on them until they feel like they fit and that they're right and natural for a C-sharp programmer. And if we can't do that, we're not going to put them in.
And I think the cool thing is that when you say it feels right and natural to the C-sharp programmer, you don't just mean you. You mean the people that are giving also feedback
Absolutely.
On the design notes.
Absolutely.
Okay.
However, the people who don't give feedback, you know, we can't know.
Yeah, sorry.
Right.
Is it possible to create code analyzers that, in fact, can rewrite code before it goes to later stages?
At the moment, no, that's not possible. Not in the sense of writing an analyzer. What you can do is...
That feels more like a transpiler.
I mean, you can... There are tricks you could play. I would say it's, I said it was not possible. It's possible, it would be a lot of work. You're in the realm of, okay, I need to somehow insert myself in the MS Build pipeline, write my own task, transform some code before it goes to the actual compiler stage, and you know make my changes then before they actually get into the compiler. And people have done those sorts of things.
Okay.
One of the things people have done it for, there are certain ways to do it. You know, AOP weaving is one that people talk about a lot,
yeah.
and also doing language features. I've seen yield for eaches and all sorts of different language features that are done in that way. One of the key problems you run into is that you don't get tooling support for it.
Right.
Okay. So things don't highlight in the editor. You know, you don't get IntelliSense right. You might just have squiggles because the compiler that's in the IDE that's loaded inside of Visual Studio, not the one that's
wrong.
It's actually you know compiling on at the command line, thinks things are wrong. And so that's a problem. So at the moment it's hard. I would say
right.
it's just hard. It's not impossible. It's very very hard.
Well, the beauty of Visual Studio is that it gives us like a lot of stuff to work with, and Roslyn's sort of a support service to give you that extra stuff.
Yeah.
And so why would you want to kind of go against the grain?
And the door is not closed on that. It's just V1, man.
Got it.
Let's get out there.
Yeah.
All right. So next, what do you think the chance of seeing fixed arrays of non-atomic types in the language? Wow, that's very specific.
That's very specific.
Can you explain that
wow.
question? And maybe,
well,
I remember, we're pretending I don't know anything
well,
still.
Fixed arrays are, you know, arrays that are laid out in memory.
Yeah.
And currently that's an unsafe feature, only works with very few types. We could certainly look at doing that. I want to say that sort of strikes a theme of features that would help performance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that I hope we can also make some headway with in C-Sharp 7. To go for places where things are unnecessarily unperformant, or unnecessarily inefficient.
Things that we can do at compile time just to make it better.
Right, and you can go on GitHub and look at some of the things we thought about. Some of them, unfortunately, require CLR support again, and so that's a bigger discussion. Can we actually evolve IL? And what happens to people who don't have access to the new version of IL and so on. So as soon as they touch, we need the CLR in on this.
Right.
It's a bigger discussion, but that doesn't mean we can't have it.
It also makes the question becomes more complex, right, as well, because today with C-Sharp 6, you can still down target, you know, to lower .NET platforms. There's no CLR support required. In fact, that very fact made us actually cut a particular feature because if there was inconsistency in how it worked on lower versions of the CLR. So because we aren't requiring CLR support, and that's why it's preferred, is so that we can continue. You can still continue to target .NET 2.0 with question dot.
Got
right?
it.
So.
All right, so next, will you publish a translator among languages? I don't know what they mean by that. Is that
Oh, they mean take some C# source code and turn it into VB source code.
So like a transpiler.
Yeah, and it can totally be done. We played with prototypes.
We built them ourselves, but we didn't build them to be bulletproof features. We built them for our own development because we build Roslyn in C# and VB.
So because you're getting the AST, you could take that AST and convert it to something else.
You could actually write a rewriter or rather write a visitor, and then that visitor just, build up a VB tree or a C# tree. It's complicated, but
it's a little harder to TypeScript to and from TypeScript, because the TypeScript also has a nice object model, but of course that's all written in TypeScript.
Yeah.
And so for us to interrupt with that as we built that feature would be a little more work. But hey, for TypeScript in particular, someone was just asking me about it today. I think it would make a lot of sense to have something that would look over C# or VB types and generate TypeScript types for it. And you could sort of use that back-end, front-end.
It'd be a fun exercise to learn Roslyn. I mean, you would certainly learn it really well.
Yeah. It's not a superhuman feat either. It's something, it would be a very cool project.
Speaking of superhumans, Eric Lippert asks, many feature proposals are for higher level sugars lower to complex code. How are more system features such as ref locals prioritized for C# 7. Let's explain the question first.
Well, let's freak out for a second that Eric Lippert's watching us right now.
Hi, Eric.
Hi, Eric.
I did say speaking of superhumans.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. System features, that sort of goes to the performance thing I said again. Features that are targeting performance in a fine-grained manner. You could say that ref locals, for instance. So that's the idea. People know that there are ref parameters in C#. You can pass something by ref, like a struct, for instance, by ref, and you don't copy it. And wouldn't it be nice if a method could also return a reference to a struct, and you could store that in locals as a ref, to avoid copying. So that's why it's a performant feature. And that is one that we can probably do without CLR changes. It's supported in the CLR. And I think it's very likely that we'll do that actually in C# 7 as part of that push for low-hanging performance fruits, if you
will. And that's still different than the actual language. That's more like on the compile time kind of stuff, or is that a language thing?
That's a language thing.
Okay. Yep.
It's a keyword ref that you could add in
more
places.
Oh, it's a ref to
you say
back.
Ref int x equals 42.
Oh, by ref in VB.
It's a local declaration.
All right, so a question. What's the status of destructible types?
I think I know who Chronic Taco is.
Dude, why are you messing with us, man?
What? This is a Charles Torres style.
Is it Charles? Fess up, man. He's fessing up
right now. So destructible types are a proposal for a way to have types that automatically clean themselves up. But there's a proposal out on GitHub. It's a little complex, and because it also, which is admirable, it also tries to track ownership of things so that you don't clean them up twice and stuff like that, and make sure that they're cleaned up even if they're handed off to someone else. At the heart of the matter, though, is having types that are cleaned up better than our current iDisposable using story. And so, if there's some way that we can enhance that and make that better, I would definitely talk to Charles about it, or maybe he can comment on GitHub.
Maybe. GitHub, man, come on.
But we should probably come up with something that fits more with the using feature in the language than what's out there currently.
We've got only about a minute, but there's another superhuman asking questions.
Hi, Don.
Don Syme, are you planning to take videos of language design meetings like .NET Core Team do recently?
We've been talking about it.
I'm happy to come by.
Yeah.
I'll record these things for you.
We may get there. We haven't done it so far because we always end up saying things that
you tried it once,
we don't
right?
want to
this
yeah,
was
yeah.
already bad enough, right?
You and tried so it once, and then
we actually did record a few things, and they turned out really
final
terrible.
60 seconds.
I destroyed the recording.
Oh, it's been
so
destroyed.
Yes.
So final 60 seconds. VB. What do you got to say about VB? Is this something we still want to do? Is it something that Roslyn supports? Is it we all happy?
Roslyn supports C# and VB equally. The VB parts of Roslyn are written in VB. It's fully supported. As part of the Roslyn API, there's a language agnostic model on top of part of it, so you can work with both languages at the same time.
So you're getting the AST from Roslyn, from VB.NET code, and C# code, you can do that. Is it a different AST? It's obviously a different AST.
Yes.
Yeah,
we made choices to make it high fidelity with a language, so it needed to be different. But
it's an abstraction over it.
And there's some active VB guys that are contributing code and fixing compiler bugs and doing various things. It's kind of exciting.
Well, what's the GitHub repo site that people can go and look at the issues and stuff?
That's github.com/.net. It's in the .NET Foundation. So /.NET/Roslyn. Also roslyn.io will take you there.
Well, thank you so much for stopping by. Thanks for watching. And we'll see you tomorrow with live content again. See you next time. Take care.